gentlemen, and welcome to the off-season extravaganza edition of On the Power Play. I'm your host, Ben Kerr. With me, as always, is Dave Gove. And Dave, we're here. It's getting to the end of July, and I think most of the major moves in the NHL offseason have happened. We're going to likely see a bit of a slow August. Jaromir Jagr is still on the market. Thomas Vanek still on the market. But other than maybe those two and a Mike Fisher or a Matt Cullen, there's not a lot left out there in free agency and maybe a trade or two. But I think for the most part, teams are done. So let's talk a little bit about what these teams have done this offseason.
Sounds good. And are you saying that you don't want Rob Scuderi on your team? How dare you? He is a two-time Stanley Cup champion.
I think he could be a piece to a Calder Cup winner next year.
That's fair.
All right. That's kind of where I've got Rob Scuderi at this point in his career.
Oh, he did finish in the AHL last season.
All right, so if we go by the analytics, the most improved team in the offseason is the Carolina Hurricanes. What do you think about that, Dave?
Oh, well, I mean, they improved in so, in, I mean, not with just their goal inning, but, I mean, they're becoming Chicago Light in the same way, you know, other teams have gone where they unload people and they pick them up from a winner and hope that those guys can replicate what they did on a winning team onto their team. And, Carolina had pretty good advanced stats the last couple years. And with that young defense they have, who knows where they're going to go. I still think that they're going to be fringe battling for a playoff spot. I don't know that they're that much better yet, but it'll be interesting to see what they can do with good goaltending.
Yeah.
Although I think that their style of play is going to be a little bit boring.
Yeah, it really is. They have been a very strong advanced stats team, and their style of goaltending has cost them the last couple years. So it's really a matter of what happens with their goaltending. Scott Darling is, of course, their new acquisition, the backup for Chicago. He's never played a full season at the NHL level. So he's a bit of a question mark. I do like what he's done in his role as a backup. I think he's been very good for Chicago in a backup role and even taken over when Corey Crawford's been injured, even played some playoff games a couple years ago when Corey Crawford was struggling. And so I think he's got what it takes, but there is still a bit of a question mark there. If that problem's solved, though, they should be a lot better. They've also gotten Justin Williams up front. I think that's a big signing for the Carolina Hurricanes. And he comes back to Carolina and leaves Washington.
He won a cup there in 2006. So I think that he's one of the best Corsi guys in the league. But I don't know if he'll be able to produce offensively as well as he has in the previous seasons, obviously, because they just don't have the talent that, say, Washington did. And I don't know that they have the centers around him that, say, he did in L.A. So that's still going to be tough. I mean, obviously it helps, but once again, I am skeptical of just by the numbers how much the advanced stats stuff's really going to help them on the ice. Because once you get to a certain point, I mean, somebody has to put the puck in the net, and Sebastian Aho and Skinner can't do it by themselves, so.
Yeah, they need another big season from Victor Rask. They need Toivo Teravainen to take the next step. Elias Lindholm is another 22-year-old who they just need to live up to being a fifth overall draft pick. Not to say that he's been bad, but they need to make him move into one of, you know, a legit top-line center in the NHL. They've added Marcus Kruger, who is a heck of a penalty killer, but is overpaid. And they've added Trevor Van Riemsdyk at the back end, and those are the two Blackhawks who you were alluding to earlier. So those are the moves that the Hurricanes have made. Funny enough and kind of scary is that they still have $17 million in cap space even after all these moves and only two spots on their roster. I don't think they'll spend all $17 million. But the Hurricanes could pick up another player if someone else has cap issues or needs to unload a contract, and that player can help Carolina win. They potentially could take on even more money here.
Yager to Hurricanes.
All right, if we look at the second most improved team, that's the Dallas Stars, and I actually think they might be the most improved team. The advanced numbers may not give that away, but just look at what they've added. Up front, they added Martin Hanzel, who will be their third-line center behind Jason Spezza and Tyler Seguin. They've added Alexander Radulov, who could play on a top line with Seguin and Jamie Benn. They've added to their defense with Mark Mathot. And perhaps most importantly, they've gone out and added Ben Bishop in net. So a team that had one of the worst goaltending, some of the worst goaltending in the NHL has gone and got a guy who's a two-time Vezina finalist. And on top of all that, they were lucky in the draft lottery, got the third overall pick. Miro Heiskanen was the pick at third overall. I'm not sure if he'll be in the NHL this year. He may have to fight for a spot. And there's also Julius Honka, who looks NHL ready, who was their first round pick a couple years ago. And so the Stars' main problems on defense and on goaltending are starting to be addressed, both with Mathot and with those young kids coming up through the system. And then you've got even more firepower up front and a defensively responsible third line center. What do you think about what Jim Nill's done this offseason, Dave?
Well, I think that Dallas fans had some questions, obviously, that he addressed. It'll still be interesting to see, like we said, regarding the defense, they might have the best first line in hockey offensively this coming season with Ben, Spezza, and Radulov. I would not be surprised to see Ben, or not Spezza, what am I talking about, Seguin, and I would not be surprised to see Ben challenging for the Art Ross Trophy again, which he won a couple seasons ago. I just, once you hit the playoffs, though, even though they brought in Ben Bishop and some of the guys, they don't really have many people on their roster that have been to the end and got it done, aside from Tyler Seguin. But he did that, you know, as a young guy in Boston, didn't really have to carry the load. So I think that they will be in contention, and like you said, are one of the most improved teams for sure. But beyond that, I still don't know if they're necessarily the best team even in their division right now. So we'll see.
I mean, they may not have won, but they do have some players who have gone far. Ben Bishop went all the way to the final. You've got Mark Mathot, who just went to the conference final. Dan Hamhuis has been to the Stanley Cup final. Jason Spezza has been to the Stanley Cup final. So you've got Martin Hanzel's gone to the Final Four. You do have some experience there. But you're right, they don't have a lot of players who've actually gotten over the top and won it all. So that will be a bit of a challenge for the Stars come playoff time, if they have enough experience on their team to really get everything done.
Tyler Seguin is making less than $6 million a year. That's crazy.
Yeah, and he's got another year on his contract after this one before he's due for a big raise.
Yeah. That's a good deal.
In terms of cap situation, the Stars may be done. Their team is full at 23 players right now on cap friendly. Got a little less than $1 million left. And they may and Jamie Oleksiak is still a restricted free agent, but even if he signs for a low amount, it could mean, you know, someone else gets sent to the minors who's at a low amount. So I don't think that will be changing much. Most teams like to go into the season with about $1 million in cap space, so there could be some movement at the bottom of the roster in Dallas just to free up a little cap space. But nothing, I don't expect anything major to happen here.
All right, sounds good.
All right, at the other end of the spectrum, we have teams who have lost an awful lot this offseason. I think in both cases, it was to be expected. And first up is the Washington Capitals. They re-signed TJ Oshie. They got him locked into a contract. They re-signed Evgeny Kuznetsov, who at one point was making some noise about some KHL offers, and he got his big contract from the Capitals. Capitals roster building is not done yet. They only have 17 players signed and have about $4 million in cap space left, so they may need to shed a little bit more money. Of course, they lost Schultz in the expansion draft. That was a big loss of a young defenseman. They lost Justin Williams to free agency. They traded away Marcus Johansson and only got back a couple of draft picks. Where do you see, is this going to be a big step back, do you think, for the Washington Capitals, a team that's won two straight President's Trophies?
I don't think it's going to be that much of a regression because of the guys. I mean, they're still so talented. I just, once again, I think that the lack of depth is going to hurt them come playoff time once again. I mean, when you're so top-heavy, like you said, I mean, they still need to sign six guys. And granted, three of those guys are probably not going to see much ice time this season just because they'll be on the practice squad. But when you have, 15% of your roster that's pretty much ineffective because you're signing bottom-of-the-barrel guys, I mean, like you said, there's not many people left out there. Like, who are they gonna pick to fill those squads? If they bring up young guys, there aren't really a lot of guys in their system that I think are – I mean, they could play at NHL level, but I don't know if they're necessarily ready or if they want to push them. And who are you going to count on those guys all season long? I think I would be shocked if they win a President's Trophy again. I think they'll definitely still be one of the best teams in the league, though.
I mean, I think looking at their system, I think Jacob Vrana is a good bet to make the NHL this year, given what they've lost up front, especially taking the place of a Marcus Johansson. Or a Justin Williams in their top nine on the wings. So he's a good bet to get a spot somewhere. Madison Bowie has been knocking at the door on defense. He may take the role of being a skating defenseman. He's on the right side instead of the left side like Schultz, and he may come up. And then Nathan Walker looks to me like their third guy, which is an interesting story. Because he's going to become the first Australian-born NHL player when he makes the NHL. So a guy who grew up playing on rollerblades in Australia eventually
He was actually born in Great Britain, but raised in Australia.
Raised in Australia. Born in Great Britain, raised in Australia. Grew up on rollerblades. Not a lot of ice there. Eventually made his way over to North America and started getting some more competition and playing on ice. And he's likely to be the first NHLer from Australia. So those are some interesting options for the Capitals. They certainly don't replace what's been lost, though, in terms of Johansson, who had almost 60 points. I think he had 58 or 59 last year. And Justin Williams, who we talked about earlier, and Schultz and Carl Alsner. They've lost a lot of talent in Washington.
Who do you think is gonna hurt him the most? Shattenkirk wasn't really that effective, so I don't really count that as much of a loss, to be honest. I mean, he came in, and what did he do for them?
He wasn't effective for them. I agree, he wasn't. I think long-term, the biggest loss is Schultz. I was a fan of Schultz. I think he's going to grow into a top-four defenseman with Vegas, and I think that he's a player in terms of what loss will be most severe long-term. Immediately, I think you got to look at Marcus Johansson, who put up almost 60 points for the team last year. He had an important role on the left wing on their second line and was very productive. So I think he's the bigger short-term loss, and the bigger long-term loss would be Schultz at the back end.
For the record, Justin Williams didn't do what he was brought in to do either, so it's not all Shattenkirk's fault. Mr. Game 7 didn't show up, so.
All right, now moving to another team that has taken significant losses and a significant overhaul, and that's the Chicago Blackhawks. We see big trades, whether it be Nicklas Hjalmarsson going out and to Arizona, and who was it that they got back? Sorry, I'm just trying. Connor Murphy coming back. I think that's a big downgrade. We learned that Marian Hossa, who is still very effective for them, will not be able to play. Will be going on long-term IR. We've seen Marcus Krueger, who was important in their penalty kill, he's out. Artemi Panarin is traded with Brandon Saad coming back. Quite a bit of talent. Trevor Van Riemsdyk out.
Marian Hossa is out for the year.
Yeah, Marian Hossa is out for the year. Mott being out. They've lost quite a bit of talent in Chicago. They're right now cap friendly, showing them a little bit over the cap. I don't think that's a major concern, because I think Hossa will go on IR as soon as the season starts, and that won't be a problem. But they've taken some losses in Chicago.
Yeah, this is perhaps the closing of their window coming up here. Obviously, with Crawford, Keith, Seabrook, Taves, Kane. Even with Saad, I mean, Saad's a pretty good player. They have obviously a fantastic bunch there. It's nowhere near the level they were 3 years ago. And I think Stan Bowman's finally had a point where he's going to have to do something to rebuild in the next couple seasons here. He did pick up a couple of draft picks, but they were late-round picks for the next couple seasons. I don't really see that helping him all that much, except maybe to move up a little bit. And I think right now, you're looking at a team that's probably not going to go into the season as a favorite to come out of the West. I think the last couple of years, a lot of people would have, you know, projected them to possibly be Stanley Cup winner or Western Conference champion. And I don't know if that's the case as their roster stands right now. Obviously, I don't know if with Saad, Patrick Kane can duplicate what he did with Panarin. I don't know if he can get back to leading the league in scoring. I think it'll be tough, obviously, to beat out other guys like Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby when they're healthy. But it'll be interesting to see if he has the same kind of chemistry. And he's a little bit older. He's played with him before, but Panarin and him just clicked so well together.
Yeah, and Saad always clicked well when he was in Chicago, more on the Jonathan Toews line than on the Patrick Kane line. So it really leaves a big hole on Patrick Kane down the left wing there with Anisimov and Kane. I've heard some say that they're hoping that Alex DeBrincat, the second-round pick from 1 year ago, who's been one of the top scorers in the OHL for three straight years, they think that he can come in and fill that role. But he's massively undersized. I don't know if he's NHL-ready in terms of his body and in terms of the amount of muscle.
He's only 19, too.
He's going to need to put on. Yeah, he's 19. He turns 20 before Christmas, though. So he's not... He's eligible to go to the AHL at this point. And that might make more sense, but I've heard him talked about. The other name who the Blackhawks really need to make an impact will be Jan Ruta, who they signed out of the Czech Republic. A defenseman, 26 years old, coming over. They need to have him on defense. Have almost a Panarin-like impact on their defense. He's not going to score that many points. Like, we know he's not going to come in and be, like, a 70-point player on their defense. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about they need him to come in and be able to play a top-four role and be able to be really effective on their defense as part of their top four and play 20-plus minutes a game. The way Panarin was able to come in on their second line and immediately be an effective scorer on the Hawks' second, maybe first line, depending on how you judge things with Taves and Kane. Usually people say the number one center is the number one line, so that's Taves' line, and then Kane is the second scoring line. But it's interchangeable. I mean, it's neither here nor there. The main point is that they need Ruta to come in and play over 20 minutes a game and play so effectively if they really want to have the strong defense that they've been known for. Dave?
Oh, there we go. Sorry. I was just saying, yeah, with their defense, in my opinion, I mean, you have Michael Roosevelt, who's 38. I don't know that he's going to be super effective. They have Kempney and, as you said, Connor Murphy earlier. Obviously, Connor Murphy's only 24. Who knows what he's going to do on that kind of team. And with Arizona, his options are kind of limited, and he was obviously moving now to a much better team. I don't know if that's going to, A, help his development a little bit more, and, B, just see more production out of him. So I think he's a guy that I'll be more intrigued to see what happens to him than, I mean, Jan Ruta, I don't really know much about him. I haven't seen him play. So obviously, if they're bringing him in from the Czech Republic, it's bigger ice over there, a little bit different for a defenseman. So we'll see.
Another player who's back in Chicago and everything old is new again is Patrick Sharp, who left 2 years ago in a trade to Dallas. They've signed him on a cheap one-year deal.
Super cheap.
Yeah, $800,000 on a one-year deal for Patrick Sharp. He's going to need to find his form from 2 years ago. His first year in Dallas was pretty good. Last year, he was an injured mess most of the year. It didn't play a lot of games, didn't score a lot of goals. Just really tough year last year for Patrick Sharp. So he's going to need to find the form he had when last time he was in Chicago and in his first season with the Dallas Stars.
He's still a fan favorite. They got that going for him at least.
Yeah, no, it was certainly a move that pleased their fan base.
I think it's kind of funny. I mean, he, throughout his career, has probably been more productive than, say, a Justin Williams. And Justin Williams signed for a way better deal to go back to a team that he was on before.
Another team with some interesting moves was the New York Rangers. They bought out Dan Girardi. They traded Derek Stepan to Arizona, along with Antti Raanta, to free up some cap space. They got a very high draft pick at 7th overall, and then I felt they reached a little bit on Elias Andersson. I was one who said that, you know, in this draft, there was a clear top two. Then there was, you know, the next group of about 10 guys who was interchangeable from 3 to 12. And then you got into some other picks. And the Rangers went out and took Elias Anderson at 7th overall, who I really thought should have been in the mid-teens. So that's an interesting pick for them. I don't think he'll be in the NHL this year. And so the Rangers' depth down the middle has taken a real hit. When you take Derek Stepan out and you put David Desharnais in, it's a downgrade. And I like David Desharnais. I mean, he's taken a lot of heat in Montreal. I always said he was a decent enough player with some big wingers beside him. And in a third-line role, he was all right. And he was just used in too prominent a role on the first line in Montreal, and that was the problem. So I don't mind him there in a third-line role for the Rangers. But it's a downgrade. With Derek Stepan being your first-line center out, that changes everything. Now, Zibanejad has to be the first-line center. And then, I don't know, JT Miller is your second-line center, and then Desharnais is the third-line center. Certainly a downgrade from when you were going with Stepan, Zibanejad, and Miller. So you've basically taken out your first liner and replaced them with a third liner. So there's a downgrade.
Well,
there.
Where do you slot in Kevin Hayes then? Because I thought he was going to be the second line guy.
I thought Hayes can play center as well. Him and Miller seem to maybe go between center and wing. Don't the two seem to play together a lot?
Yeah, I just think with the loss of Stefan, I think he's going to be originally slotted into the second line. I don't know. I mean, obviously, we won't know until the new season, but
yeah.
I was under the impression that Kevin Hayes is going to be their second line center going
yeah,
into
then,
the season.
Then Miller maybe plays on the wing, or Miller plays the third line center, and either way, it's still a loss, I think, from Derek Stepan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Derek Stepan. I think that he does so many small things so well. I mean, he might not be the best scorer. He might not be one of the top 5 or 10 centers in the league, but I think he's, top 20 maybe at times when he wants to be. So that is big. And I think that Mika Zibanejad is a fine player, but I don't think he's as good as Derek Stepan is. And I think that obviously their defense got much better. Their goaltending should be fantastic still. I think Henrik Lundqvist had a better year than he did, 2 years ago. So hopefully he can have one more good season, but...
Well, there's no backup behind him now, because that was one of the last things I was going to get to was the backup. But there's no backup behind Lundqvist now. Andre Pavlik is a sieve, okay? I do not know how he still has an NHL job. I know he's going from the starter in Winnipeg to the backup in New York. But the guy was a sieve. He was one of the worst goalies in the NHL, and that's including backups. I've never liked him. He's had one good season in his career. Every other year, he's been one of the worst goalies statistically in the NHL. I think he's terrible. I think Andre Pavlik is terrible. And if Lundqvist gets hurt or if Lundqvist struggles, he is not the answer for the Rangers. Let's put it that way. The other thing, the Rangers' defense is better. Brendan Smith came in late last year, performed well for them. He got a new contract, got re-signed. Many thought when he got re-signed that took the Rangers out of the Kevin Shattenkirk sweepstakes, but it didn't. They were managed to get Kevin Shattenkirk on a 4-year deal and signed him up. So. The Rangers defense with Shattenkirk in there, with Smith in for the full season, with Dan Girardi out, with Brady Shea being young and doing as much as he did last year, I think their defense is much improved.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think their defense has moved from mediocre to above average. So Dan Girardi was a real problem. I don't understand why Tampa Bay was into getting him, but I think the loss of him is going to help the Rangers, because they need to get him out of there to bring some new blood in. And Shattenkirk, I think I mentioned this before, but he got everything he wanted. He got to go to the President's Trophy winner and try to win a cup, failed miserably, and now he got his big contract anyway on the team he wanted to go to. So good for him. I hope it works out. Do you think he'll be paired with McDonald though?
I think that's a smart pairing because Shattenkirk's biggest issue is his defensive play, and McDonough is very solid defensively. So I think that that will free up Shattenkirk to push the offense and to try and drive some offensive play more. I think that would be a good pairing for the Rangers. The only thing would be if you really wanted to go a lot stronger defensive pairing with McDonough and really use him as a shutdown defender, then you could put Shattenkirk on the second pair and pair up someone different with McDonough.
You think this is the last season we'll see Rick Nash? I mean, he's making 7.8 right now, and he's an unrestricted free agent. He'll be 34 next season. So somebody will be able to sign him before the 35 mark.
Yeah, I think someone will sign Rick Nash. I don't think he's getting anything close to 7.8. But I do.
So you think the Rangers then try to lock him up for longer or not?
I don't think the Rangers will, no. I think Rick Nash will be on a new team in 2018-19 because I think the Rangers will use that 7.8 and go out into the market again and try to sign whoever is the big name on the market. Right now, who is that big name and who would they stick it to if they managed to sign him?
What, next season, you mean? John Tavares?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's got to be enticing if you're the Rangers management. To absolutely steal the Islanders' best player, and you're going to have the cap space to be able to do it with Nash's 7.8 coming off the books, along with some other money that they could free up. That's got to be enticing for the Rangers. I don't know if Tavares will make it to July 1st, but it's an interesting scenario to think about right now. Especially with the Rangers desperately needing a number one center. I mean, what did we just talk about?
Yeah.
So
no,
it fits in so many ways for them that if he gets to market, you've got to think there's going to be a big offer from the Rangers.
That'd be crazy.
And, I mean, he wouldn't even really have to move.
The Islanders would hate him so much.
Oh, he'd be so hated on the island. It would be incredible.
Kind of want it to happen now. I don't even hate the team. I have nothing against them. I just.
All right, Dave. We'll take a quick break and plug our sponsor here. You know, it's the middle of summer. Things are hot. You want to sit out on the patio. Hopefully, you've got a pool. But even if you don't, sit outside. Have a few beverages. What better to keep your beverages cold without watering them down than the Chill Puck? Yes, it might be a puck, but it's good all year round, and it's especially good in the summer. Just freeze your Chill Puck, stick it on the bottom of your can or bottle, and it will keep your drink cold out in the hot sun for considerably longer than it would have been otherwise. So that is a big help at this time of year, no matter where you live, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, anyway. Can get them at chillpuck.com. Use the promo code LASTWORD, and you will get free shipping on your Chill Pucks. Dave, what's the weather like in California? Are you using your Chill Pucks?
It's 90 degrees. Of course I am.
And it's in the 90s here as well. You know, the July heat, loving my air conditioning and my Chill Pucks. They get me through the summer. All right, Dave, let's go to your team, the Los Angeles Kings. A big offseason in terms of changes with the front office, changes with the coaching staff, those type of things. But what is going to change on the ice? What have your Kings done?
We got Michael Camilleri. That's about it.
Yeah, a little cap strapped.
It's not a great off season for us. To be honest, there's not a whole lot to say there. I'm glad that we re-signed Nick Shore, Kevin Gravel. We locked up Michael Mersch and Paul Ledoux. These are all the young guys for the most part. Nick Shore is a little bit older. He was with the Kings most of the season. I mean, what else can you do? I mean, we brought back Andre Lapionov. he's on a PTO, but it's not looking that great. I mean, our top two lines will be okay if Gabrick and Camilleri stay healthy. But aside from that, we're once again going to be probably a pretty good defensive team with John Stevens as the coach now. And if Jonathan Quick has a full healthy season, that'd be nice. Jeff Zadkoff's still our backup, and he's god-awful, so we got to hope for that. Otherwise, they'll probably have to try and make a trade for somebody or do something, because we have no goaltenders in the system. We drafted one this year, but he's not going to be ready for a couple seasons. What was his name? I mean, we did actually grab Cal Peterson. I will say that. So Cal Peterson is a guy we signed who, I think...
coming out of Notre Dame, likely to start
in
the AHL. The Sabres really wanted to sign him. He was a Sabres, I think, third rounder a couple years ago. Played all 4 years at Notre Dame and then opted to go the college route. One of the best goalies in college hockey is probably going to be your AHL starter this year because he needs the minutes. I mean, he's young. He's coming straight out of college. You don't see a lot of goalies go straight from college straight to the NHL. There's usually some AHL time in there. But I think he can be a good backup for Quick down the road. But yeah, he's not ready now. If Quick were to have an injury, I don't think you want to throw him straight from the NCAA into the NHL.
You know what? I made a mistake. Zadkoff is still in our system. He is going to the AHL, though. Because we signed Darcy Kuemper. I forgot about that.
Kuemper's not a bad choice as a backup. I thought he's been okay in Minnesota. Never lived up to the starter's billing that he originally had coming up through their system. But he is a decent goalie. He should be a decent backup for Jonathan Quick.
Yeah, overall, I mean, like I said, and there's not really a lot to talk about in LA other than, like you said, the management's changed. Rob Blake's come in and done a few things. I have liked Blake's negotiating and the dollar amounts he signed people for. He's locked up, you know, some players. But aside from that, hasn't really been able to attract any of the marquee free agents or anything. And our team is not necessarily any faster than it was before. So we're still going to be big and slow and defensive. So I know that they said that they wanted to shift their philosophy to be more goal-scoring orientated because the fans have loudly and spoken out about how they are canceling season tickets and doing other things because the Kings are so boring and they don't score goals and they didn't make the playoffs again. So I think, obviously, in L.A., you have to be attractive, and you know, the Kings are not an attractive team right now when you watch them play. So.
No, and the Lakers have all the Laker hype right now with Lonzo Ball, and that's going to be a challenge for the Kings, especially if, you know, Lonzo Ball comes in and has a solid rookie season, and then a year from now, LeBron James and Paul George are added to the Kings. That could be that could be a bit of an issue for the Kings in terms of marketing.
It is. And like I said, I mean, I know three people that canceled or, you know, changed their season tickets to less games than full season because they're like, I don't want to pay for a full season if it's going to be more of this crap. So it is, the mentality here. I mean, the Kings will probably still pretend that they sold out a bunch, 100-plus games in a row by buying their own tickets, which I'm pretty positive we definitely would not have sold out a couple of games at the end against the Coyotes or, you know, Carolina or something. So They still have this sellout streak they keep hyping, but we all know it's BS, so.
Yeah. And now, the most important thing that the Kings did this offseason, the one that's the real steal for me, is Gabe Vilardi in the NHL draft. I had him as my third best prospect in the draft. I know he's got some skating concerns, but the guy's a power. He sounds like an LA player. Like, as soon as I start saying, he's not the fastest guy, but he's big and he's strong and he gets to the front of the net, I know what you Kings fans are thinking, that he's more of a lot of the guys that you have, but he's a little bit more skilled.
Wait. You said gets to the net, and then you said, like, guys we have. I think that there's a problem with what you said. There's, all like, right. Two people on our team that get to the net. One is Dustin Brown, who doesn't put it in the net, and the other is Jordan Nolan, who just decides to run into goalies, so.
Yeah, well, that's what I say. He gets to the net, but he's got more skill when he gets there, and I think that's the big thing. I'm a fan of Vilardi. I think, like, his two-way game. I like his size and his compete level, and I think that his skating can be fixed a little bit. I think part of it is a kid who went through a major growth spurt and is a little awkward in his body right now at 18 years old. But that's not something that's uncommon, and that's not something that's going to be that hard to fix. And even with him being a little bit awkward in his body, he's still a dominant player in the OHL. So once he figures it all out, I think he's going to be a very good NHL player.
I'm a little concerned we still haven't signed him to an entry-level contract. Like, what are we waiting for here?
I wouldn't think it would be a big concern. He's a junior player. Likely on the Kings, with their depth, going to go back to junior rather than play on a third or fourth line. I don't think it's a big concern as to when exactly you sign him. So, but I'm sure it'll get done. I'm sure they're just haggling over the bonuses at this point.
Fair enough.
Right.
What's going on in Montreal?
Oh, boy, Dave. Oh, boy. Today was a bad day in Montreal.
Really?
Today was a bad day. Bit sad that Andre Markov will not be back with the Montreal Canadiens. Gone to the KHL. And with that, the entire left side of the Montreal Canadiens defense has changed. Last season, we had Andre Markov and Alexei Emelin, who's now with went to Vegas and then was traded from Vegas. Where did I can't even remember where Emelin. Nashville. We traded to Nashville. We had Nathan Beaulieu, who's in with the Sabres. And we had, looked like coming up, Mikhail Sergachev, who's now with Tampa Bay as Jonathan Drouin's in Montreal. And so, from there, now there's Carl Alsner, David Schlemko, Mark Streit, Jacob Jerebik. The only guy on the left side who's a holdover is Brandon Davidson, who played maybe a dozen games for the Habs last year with a trade deadline pickup from Edmonton, and really didn't show an awful lot in Montreal. So, pretty much the entire left side of the defense has changed here. Nikita Nesterov is also out, gone back to the KHL as well. So Montreal, which was the most Russian team in the league, now has no Russians, as Alexander Radulov has also left, and the only Russian in their system is now Nikita Sherbak. So in the course of one offseason, we've seen Radulov, Nesterov, Markov, Emelin, all leave the and Sergachev all leave the Habs, which is quite the turnover. It also now starts to make a little bit more sense as to why Montreal didn't make an offer to Vadim Shipakov, which I was upset about, and I'm still upset about, because I don't like this direction of totally thinking that the Russians were the problem in Montreal. Russians might be a problem in Washington, but it's not with the Capitals, and it's not a problem in Montreal. So that's something that's happened there. I think the Jonathan Drouin trade, though, I think that was a good move. You traded a prospect for a kid with huge upside. The prospect had huge upside, but so did Drouin. And Drouin's only 22, and he's going to come in, and he's going to play on Montreal's first line. And the sky's the limit for him. So I did like that move. I think Montreal's defense is weaker than last year. I think losing Alex Radulov is a big loss up front. And they've got $8.5 million in cap space right now. And I'm not sure where they're going to spend it on.
Jaromir Jagr.
The wings are also full. I mean, if you look at the Habs wings, right now, one of Andrew Shaw or Paul Byron is going to start the season on the fourth line. Or Alex Hemsky. One of those three is going to be
Paul Byron. Paul Byron. He can play center too, can't he?
He can, but I'm thinking Galchenyuk will go to center. So I'm not even counting Galchenyuk amongst those wingers. If you're putting Byron at center you're still pushing Shaw to the fourth line. Like, no matter how you do it, you're still pushing a Shaw or a Byron or a Hemsky to the fourth line at this point. Charles Hudon is looking for a spot on the team. It may come on the fourth line. So wing is not an issue. Montreal hasn't addressed their center ice position. Still going into the season with what looks like Dano, Galchenyuk, and Plekanec down the middle. I don't know what they're going from here. I'd really like to see them sign Stefan DaCosta on a cheap one-year deal. I think that's a good gamble for them to take at center ice. But I don't know what they're going to do with this $8.5 million. There's been some rumblings out there that this money is a war chest, that the Canadians have a plan to go after Jonathan Tavares. And I just don't see it, Dave. If you wanted to go after Jonathan Tavares, why did you trade PK Subban? Why did you trade his best friend? If your plan was to go after Tavares, you don't trade away his best friend. The other thing that comes to mind, if your plan is to go after Jonathan Tavares, you've got a real disadvantage in Montreal, and that's taxes. You're going to need to pay him about $3 or $4 million more than a team like Dallas would have to pay him, or $2 million, $1.5 to $2 million more than a team in New York or Philadelphia would have to pay him. So,
it's obvious Tavares doesn't care about money based on his current contract, so don't worry about that.
Or, you know, you look at the Florida teams. If one of the Florida teams were to go after Tavares, that's again a good $3 million difference. That's why Steven Stamkos took 8.5 in Florida instead of 10.5 in Toronto. Big tax difference. So I don't know about this idea that this money is being earmarked for Tavares. I'm not sure if that's the eggs in the basket that you want to play with if you're Montreal here. So I really don't know what Bergevin's doing. People have listened to me. I read my articles. I've been accused of being a Montreal homer before. I think I've always tried to be fair. And at this point, I think I'm pretty down on what Bergevin's done and where the Habs are this offseason and the end of last season. So I don't know how you can call me a homer when I was very, very critical of their trade deadline moves, and I'm extremely critical of what they've done this offseason.
Don't worry about being called a homer. I think that's like the dumbest insult, like a lot of the time. It's like, well, no crap. He's a fan of a team.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Just because I'm a fan of a team doesn't mean I blindly defend everything they do. Like, there's moves I like, there's moves I don't. I mean, I went crazy last year on this podcast when PK Subban got traded. just went crazy on it. So if there's no blind defense for this team and this management group out there.
I don't have a lot to say about the Canadiens that you haven't already said, but I will say I struggle to see, unless Carey Price goes full beast mode, how you're going to do much better than, say, a second round exit in a playoff situation, just because your defense is a little thin still. And as you mentioned, I mean, you have 5 million wingers and not enough centers, which, I mean, center is so important, especially come playoff time. And I don't know.
The only thing you can
do... I'm not a big fan of what your GM has done, and I know that you aren't either necessarily, but even looking towards the future, you guys don't have... I mean, you've already lost a couple draft picks for next season, I think, so...
Actually, we're up a draft. We got our first rounder and 2 seconds next year, so... Draft pick-wise, they're okay. Prospect-wise, they're very thin. They're amongst the worst prospect groups in the NHL. The one thing you can say for Bergevin is that Carey Price is locked up for 9 years, and goaltenders age very well, and he's 29 right now, and I think he'll be fine through much of the next 6-7 years. And your forward group, your top six forwards, you've got Max Pacioretty at 28, and then the next 5 forwards on the team are 25 and younger. So the forwards are all young. The defense is getting long in the tooth with Shea Weber and Jeff Petrie getting older. And Carl Alsner is 29 as well. So the defense isn't that young. And at least there's some prospects there. But still, one of the weaker prospect groups.
Hey, don't worry, though. Don't worry. You got Mark Stritt.
Well, yeah, 39-year-old Mark Stritt. I'm not even sure if he's going to be part of the top six. It'll be between him and Jarabek for that third-line spot, I think, at this point. But I agree with you. This team looks like a team that makes the playoffs and goes out in the second round. That's what they look like. First and second round losses. There's just not enough strength at center ice, and it's going to be the same problems that they've had the last several years. And the only way things get better at this point is some miracle center falls from the sky who they can spend that $8.5 million on, or one of Galchenyuk or Drouin suddenly learns the defensive game needed to become a center and takes a huge step forward in terms of two-way play. We know both of those guys can score well enough to be first-line centers. Can they play in their own end well enough to be first-line centers? At this point, they haven't shown it. So you've got to hope and pray that one of those two takes a step forward, and then maybe you've got a chance of doing something. But short of that, they just look like a decent team, but a very flawed team. And that's not a good place to be in the NHL, to be running in circles, not getting high draft picks, but not really competing for the cup either.
Well, let's move on, because we got a little bit of time left, and talk about the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah. What have the Sharks done this offseason? They lost Patrick Marleau, and I do want to talk about Patrick Marleau's new team before we wrap this up.
Okay.
They've lost Patrick Marleau. They've locked up players like Vlasic and Burns long-term. They've looked at Joe Thornton for one more year. Where is San Jose going? Are they in that running in circles, not a true cup contender, not a rebuilding team that I just described with the Montreal Canadiens? Of course, the Sharks are strong down the middle with one of Thornton and Pavelski playing center. They seem to alternate depending on where the faceoff is. and what side of the ice it is on. They took about half of the faceoffs for their line each last year. Logan Couture as the second line center. And Thomas Hertl probably shifting the center on the third line. They look like they're strong down the middle, but they just don't look strong enough as a team to me to take that next step and win a Stanley Cup. What do you think, Dave?
No, it's definitely a step back for them right now. Although I don't think, obviously, he's been a huge part of the team. He's the greatest Shark of all time. But Patrick Marleau's kind of older, and I don't know if they just felt that he wasn't worth the money when they feel they can get the same kind of production from some of the younger guys, like maybe Donskoy or Chris Tierney or, you know,
Timo
Carlson.
Meyer.
Yeah. So I get why they kind of had to let him go, and it's much harder to replace Joe Thornton than it is to replace Patrick Marleau, which for Sharks fans is tough to hear sometimes, but I think that's the real truth there. So, and obviously you lock up Brent Burns, who just won the Norris Trophy, and granted he is 32, but I think it's okay. I don't know that you're going to find anybody outside of Ottawa that's a better offensive defenseman. So, with that said, I think Marc-Edouard Vlasic is a better overall defenseman at times, especially in the defensive zone. And I think that he might be the best defensive defenseman in the league. So locking him up for only $1 million less than Brent Burns, that's huge for them, because he shuts down guys better than almost anybody I've seen in a long time. So, but
and
Martin Jones,
Justin Braun with him, his pair with Justin Braun is really good.
Yeah, Martin Jones is obviously locked up for a while as well. He's played well for them, but he hasn't really stolen a lot of games, in my opinion. I haven't really seen him. Obviously, he was with the Kings before, and he was serviceable. I don't know how much higher his bar can go than what we've seen from him so far. And he's already 27, and like you said, goalies do age well. You know, you might see him become a bit better in the next couple of years. Sometimes goalies don't really hit their stride until almost 30, but you lock a guy up for that long, you're just kind of expecting above-average goaltending play, in my opinion. So,
well, they're not paying him. They're not paying him huge. 5.75 in this goalie market. It's not huge. You know, considering that Scott Darling hasn't proven himself at all as a starter and is getting 4. So, yeah, like it's not. It's a lot of term on Martin Jones, but it's not a crippling cap hit. Considering it's a new contract that was just signed and will start next season. And he's a serviceable starter. Like that's the word that comes to mind with him, serviceable. He's not going to steal games. He's going to be around the 15th best goalie in the NHL, you know? That's what he's going to be. He's going to be your average starter, which is not going to hurt you, but he's not going to steal games for you either. And that's okay if you've got a powerhouse team in front of him, but I don't think the Sharks have a powerhouse team in front of him at this point.
I think a lot of Sharks fans I talk to just want him to go into rebuild mode, but how do you do that with some of the stars you have on that team and look at them and say, hey, you want to sign with us when you really, they need to rebuild. Obviously, they went to the Cup Final last year, so it's hard to say that. But I felt like they needed to start rebuilding a couple of years ago instead of now, where they're stuck in a situation where they made the final, they have a bunch of good guys, and you don't know where you're going. Them and the Caps always say that, you know, they're like sister-brother teams. And you're kind of seeing the same thing. You lose some guys, you're still going to be good, but you're just mediocre. And you said that the Habs are in the same situation, but at least with the Canadians, we've seen them kind of, you know, a few years back, do a bit of a rebuild at least when they drafted really well with certain guys, even though we got rid of them all. But, you know, you got to do that at some point. Sharks haven't had to do that in 20 years. It's kind of hard at some point to just suck it up and say, you know what, maybe we just need to have one or two bad seasons and then go at it again.
Yeah, they're going to free up. I mean, they've got $8 million in cap space right now. Still need four players on their roster, but that's not going to take up a huge amount of cap space. They're probably bottom-end guys. Next season, they free up a ton of money, though. Joe Thornton comes off the books. That's $8 million. Joel Ward comes off the books. That's another $3.25 million. Yannick Hansen comes off the books. That's another $2 million there. Your RFAs next season are going to be Thomas Hertl, who's already at $3 million, not going to get a huge raise, and Dylan DeMello, again, not going to get a huge raise, and a UFA as your backup goalie in Aaron Dell. So you get another backup goalie, or you keep Dell. Probably not going to cost a lot.
Dell's horrible. They're not going to keep him.
Yeah, but even another backup, it's not going to be a big... You're going to have a good $10 million in cap space at least next year. If not more. So, you know, even after you get your re-signings and stuff done, actually they're probably on track right now for a good $16 million in cap space next year. So they've got the ammunition to go out and sign some big names in a year's time.
San Jose Shark, Jaromir Jagr.
All right. Speaking of the Sharks, Patrick Marleau goes to the Leafs. 3-year deal, $18 million for a guy who's drafted in 1997, is 38 years old. What do you think about this deal for Patrick Marleau?
Oh, it's a terrible deal for the Leafs. I mean, it's fine for one season, but by the end of this, I think it's really going to be bad for them. And I just... They got super young, they have a ton of talent, and then they went and gave a 37-year-old, it's going to be 38, their richest contract on the team. Like, what? I don't know. I mean, for all the good they've done in recent years, or luck that they've had in getting, you know, Austin Matthews, this didn't make a lot of sense to me. So, I... They're obviously they have long-term IL for Nathan Horton and Joffrey Lupul, but I just don't understand giving Patrick Marleau that much money. I know that you think your window's now or, you know, maybe next season, but next season, I mean, can you count on him to put up 25 to 30 goals when he's 39? No. Like, who does that? I mean, even Jagr doesn't do that.
He looks his advanced stats. Look like a guy who's slowing down. I know the goal stats didn't, but his shooting percentage was very high last year. His defensive stats have fallen off the map. He gives up a lot of shots now when he's on the ice that he didn't give up before. He's fallen off. And that's expected with a guy who's going to be 38 and like you said, in a few weeks. He's looking like a second or third line forward, and they're giving him $18 million over the next 3 years. It does seem a little crazy, although I highly doubt he plays that third year. The way the contract is structured, he can basically walk away and go to Robidoux Island in the third year and collect all his money and sit on long-term IR, which I think is the lead. Plan here because that'll be the year that they also get Joffrey Lupul off their hands and
Lupul comes off next season.
Yeah. So they'll have some extra cash sitting around that they use to pay guys who don't play for them anymore in 2 years' time when Marlowe's ready to come up. Dominic Moore, I like that pickup for the Leafs a lot cheaper. Then Boyle, the only difference in him and Boyle, Brian Boyle, is size. But I think Dominic Moore does a lot of good things for their fourth line on the penalty kill and gives them the center that can play a lot of penalty kill minutes that Mike Babcock likes so he can keep his top two centers in Austin Matthews and Nazem Kadri away from the penalty kill. Both as good as Kadri was last year defensively, and he got a lot of praise for the defensive work he did 5-on-5. Played almost no penalty kill minutes. And I don't think it's I don't think that he's incapable of playing on the penalty kill. I think it's a deliberate strategy by Mike Babcock to keep him fresh for 5-on-5, which he often does with his top two centers. So that's something that I think the Leafs have done well with. I also think the Ron Hainsey deal, pretty good contract, at least on a one-year deal. The 2 years could be a bit concerning as he's 36, and it's a 36 plus or 35 plus contract. But he had a decent playoff run with the Penguins, and he had a decent run with Carolina as well last year. I think Hainsey's very underrated. And he probably goes on the Leafs' third pair unless they move him to the right side, which there's been some talk of, and playing him top 4 minutes. So that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on. What side does Ron Hainsey play? But the Leafs really haven't addressed their need for a top pair right-handed defenseman. And I think that's what's still going to put them through growing pains this year. I also think the Leafs might take a step back from where they were last year. The reason for that is this. The Leafs were incredibly healthy last year. The only big player on their team who was hurt was Morgan Rielly, and he missed less than 10 games. Can you expect that kind of luck with injuries 2 years in a row? Something tells me that you really can't, that that's a lucky break to not have anybody suffer an injury. And I'm not going to say who it is, but I'm just going to say for the Leafs to go through the full season without losing any key players again, I think that's unlikely.
Yeah, I know, that's true. I will say, though, that if you want somebody that's not going to get banged up, Patrick Marleau has been very resilient throughout his career, so.
But, I mean, it's just a lot.
Do you not count Joffrey Lubel just not playing the entire season in your man games loss injury?
But the Leafs knew that before the season started. They planned for it in the summer, that he wasn't going to play any game. He hasn't played in, like, 2 years. They know he's not going to play, so I'm not really counting him or Stefan Robidoux. I'm looking at the roster.
It's crazy to me. Like, Nathan Horton, his contract, like, he got hurt. He's never going to play again because he got hurt. Like, Joffrey Lupul, like, how hurt is he really that he can't play?
I don't know. There have been whispers that the Leafs have something on him. And it's coming from Steve Simmons. So let's be fully clear on who the source is. Steve Simmons has said that Joffrey Lupul is healthy and is ready to play. And when he talked to Joffrey Lupul in July of last year, his rehab was going well and he was expected to play. Then, sometime in August, Joffrey Lupul went on radio silence. Steve Simmons can't get him to pick up the phone, can't get his agent to pick up the phone, can't get the Leafs to talk about him. No one wants to talk about Joffrey Lupul and where his injury status is. They sneak him in August, to a doctor for a checkup, and that doctor comes back and says he's injured and unable to play long-term IR. They do this when no media is around and weeks before training camp is set to open. Then they leave him on long-term IR again. They're likely to put him on IR this season. They're likely going to again sneak him into some kind of doctor's appointment somewhere where no media is around and is able to talk to Lupul. Why is everything so secretive with Joffrey Lupul? Steve Simmons believes that Joffrey Lupul wants to play in the NHL.
He's only 33.
That he's healthy enough to play in the NHL, and that he's looking toward, and he knows he needs to play and put up a season to be able to earn a free agent contract next year when he's a free agent. No one's going to sign him if he doesn't play again this year. 3 years of no playing? You think anybody's going to sign him? He's going to get a training camp tryout at best. like a PTO at best, Dave.
No, I know.
Nobody's going to give him guaranteed money after not having seen him in 3 years. So if he's healthy, he should be grieving this to the NHLPA and through the grievance process and saying that the Leafs are preventing him from playing. And so Steve Simmons says the only reason he's not going through the grievance process is that there is some kind of blackmail or dirt that the Leafs have on Joffrey Lupo that they are using to pressure him not to play in the NHL. To sit at home, collect your paycheck, we'll still pay you, but as long as you don't try to get on the team and mess with our cap situation, this information never sees the light of day. And Steve Simmons is convinced of it. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm putting it out there that this is Steve Simmons' theory on Joffrey Lupo.
Well, I know it's Steve Simmons, but that's kind of what I've felt for a while, so it does seem weird.
Yeah, there's something going on there. I don't know. I mean, I understand the Leafs. Like, he doesn't have a role on your team at $5.5 million. He really doesn't. Where does he fit? Marlowe's probably taking the left wing spot that was Zach Hyman's all last year, which is with Austin Matthews and Michael Nylander. Then you've got Marner with Bozak and James Van Riemsdyk. Then you've got the defensive line that scores some points with Leo Komarov, Connor Brown, and Nazem Kadri. Two of those guys scored 20 goals last year, and Leo Komarov scored 20 goals 2 years ago. So where does he fit in that top nine? And do you want a $5.5 million fourth line player? That's the advantage to the Leafs in keeping him away is the cap space they free up.
Well, I gotta take off here.
Yeah, we're over. We've done a long show, but it's our only show for the summer. If you listened in, we hope you love On the Power Play. I'm going away. I'm going to Portugal for a bit, Dave.
Enjoy it. Have fun.
Going to the Azores, going to relax in the volcanic hot springs, swim in the waterfall lakes and things like that. Should be great, a great bit of relaxation for me. I don't know what you've got planned the rest of the summer, Dave, but we'll be back around the middle of September as training camps get open, and hopefully Jaromir Jagr has a contract.
Yeah, my summer is not exciting. I'm going back to school, so.
All right.
All right. Have fun in Europe. I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later.